is Off the Woodwork, your number one sucker source from the home for Atlanta United, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Check back each week for a breakdown of the previous week's match, exclusive interviews, and more on MLS and World Soccer. Now, here are your hosts, Kyle Tate, Craig Carlos Valentino.
Off the Woodwork from 92.9 The Game, I'm Kyle Tate. And, well, Craig Carlos Valentino going to have to miss this week's episode. We are kind of trying to take a different view of the podcast. So you might have noticed that last week we didn't record an episode. We kind of used it to reset and figure out the vision for what the podcast is going to be. And CCV and I are working on making it more interview-centric and also kind of widening the lens in covering international football. So we still want to be very Atlanta United-centric. And there are a lot of great podcasts in the Atlanta area. I want to tip the cap to, of course, Soccer Down Here. Jason Longshore does a fine job over there. He'll actually join us later on the program. Also, Mouth of the South, Home After Dark, a lot of different great Atlanta United podcasts. But with that, what CCV and I want to do with Off the Woodwork is not only make it Atlanta United and Major League Soccer-centric, but also bring interesting stories from around the world of football and make it more interview-centered, too. So, got a really special show to bring you this week. I wish Craig could be here for it, but later on in the program, Darren Eales, the president of Atlanta United, is going to join us not only to break down the 1-1 draw at Portland, but also to preview Houston. And then on top of that, Darren is going to chat a bit about White Hart Lane. He used to be at Tottenham before coming here as the president of Atlanta United in 2014. If you haven't heard or if you don't follow the Premier League, Tottenham is saying farewell to their longtime stadium, White Hart Lane. It's been the home of Spurs football since 1899, 118 years of service. And Darren has some incredible memories there from his 4 or 5 years with Spurs, and we'll have him on later on the show. And then as we wrap things up later on today, we'll also talk with Jason Longshore about Houston Dynamo coming up Saturday at Bobby Dodd Stadium. So a lot of football talk over the next 45 minutes or so, and thanks a lot for joining us. You can follow the show on Twitter at OffTheW929. You can follow myself on Twitter at HereKyleTate. And first off, let's start things off with taking a look at what happened this past weekend. 1-1, the final score at Portland. It was a match that a lot of people really thought would be a lot higher scoring than that. They thought there would be a whole lot of goals between these two teams, two of the higher scoring sides in MLS this season. And so the fact that it finished 1-1 really was, it was kind of a shocker. United did some really, really good things this week, and we'll hear from Tata Martino, we'll hear from Miguel Almiron and Jeff Lorenowitz on their different takes this week at Portland as well. But one thing I noticed personally is that Atlanta United seemed to really build from the back well. It's something that I know on Off the Woodwork in past episodes I've criticized a little bit. This team has been, when they've been on the counterattack, they've been flying up and down the pitch. They've been able to get very, very quick goals. But when teams, I think DC United is the perfect illustration of this, have kind of sat back and absorbed the attack of Atlanta United and forced the five stripes to build from the back, that's when they've run into trouble and they haven't been able to build something using the entire pitch. Well, against Portland, that really changed this past weekend. They were able to really use the entire pitch. They were able to start with the center backs and work it all the way forward. I thought Leandro Gonzalez-Pires and Michael Parkhurst did a fine job of distributing from the back and pushing it forward. And Portland really tried to force Atlanta United out of their comfort zone, and they were able to handle that quite nicely. So that's something that later on in the show, Jason Longshore, we're going to dive into a little bit more. But in talking to a number of different people surrounding the Five Stripes this week, there was one resounding theme after the 1-1 draw in Portland. Atlanta United needs to shoot more. And Tata Martino this week in training echoed the same thing.
Yeah, we want to shoot more, and we want to have more numbers arriving into the area. So those are two things that we could have done better in the last game.
Now, I think the number one illustration of that philosophy is Miguel Almiron. Almiron, of course, is the playmaker in the central midfield. He is the go-to guy for creating all these opportunities. He created the lion's share of Joseph Martinez's chances before Martinez went down with the injury back in, late March, early April. And so Almiron is a pass-first, shoot-second kind of guy, and he seemed a little bit gun-shy when it comes to pulling the trigger. There were two key opportunities, I thought, against Portland that there were some really nice chances. One was on his left foot, his more comfortable foot, and the other was on his right foot, which he doesn't seem comfortable with at all. And so I can see why, if it's a right-footed opportunity, he might look to pass it away because he doesn't want to waste the opportunity and fire wildly. But with that left-footed chance, it was a beautiful touch from Yamil Assad to get it by the defense. And then ahead to Almiron, and he had a beautiful flick. I mean, it was a thing straight out of FIFA. It was fantastic. But then Almiron had the opportunity, instead of firing away, he laid it off for Julian Gressel in the box, and it ended up getting stolen away. It was a ball that Gressel probably should have attacked and fired toward goal. Instead, he kind of stayed back on it, wasn't aggressive toward it, and that was that, and the opportunity was missed. So there were a couple of situations, though, throughout the match and throughout the last couple of weeks, really, where Atlanta United just has not taken the chances that they have, and instead of shooting, they're looking to pass and being a little bit too fine. And Almiron talked about that on Thursday at training.
Yeah, I think I need to have more confidence to shoot, but in the game against Portland, there were maybe two opportunities where I could have shot, but I thought I played my teammate in a better position, but yeah, I can have more confidence to shoot.
So with that being said, I asked Tata Martino about building from the back, if that was something that he felt that Atlanta United could still improve on, or if after watching the Portland game over again, he felt that they did a pretty adequate job. And here's what he had to say. He kind of echoed the same thing, that building from the back was really a vast improvement this past week out west.
Yeah, I confirm what I said after the game, that we played well out of the back, and I thought it was, for an away game, it was the best job that we had done so far. In terms of our just controlling the ball, controlling the game. Maybe we lacked a little more depth, but that's it.
And then in terms of strategy for this Atlanta United team, Jeff Lorenowitz also met with the media on Thursday, and he was talking about the importance of scoring early, because if you notice through their first 10 matches, Atlanta United has they've thrived on those early goals. In the first 15 to 20 minutes, if they can get on the board, it's going to be a good day. This team hasn't done well when playing from behind or when playing in nil-nil or 1-1 games through the middle goings. Certainly their early first half has been much stronger as a whole in general than into halftime and into the second half. So Jeff Lorenowitz talked about that this week. He talked about the importance for this team of scoring early and getting off on the right foot right out of the gate.
The two that come to mind are, you know, obviously last week and then the Salt Lake game. I think it really had to do with the tweaks at halftime, what was said, sort of how the things that are said get you going. I think at times it's not so much a tactical thing as it is an emotional thing. So we come out in the second half and we're sharp and we're into it, then we're good. When we're not, when we're maybe lazy or unprepared or feeling like we can ease ourselves into it, things like the New York City game happened. So I think that we just have to focus on, you know, obviously you're always thinking about the tactical side, but, you know, you focus on the emotional side, make sure that you're up for the challenge. And usually when you're on the front foot, you're doing okay.
And then he also gave some great insight into Tata Martino's tactics and the role of Lorenowitz and Carlos Carmona, his fellow holding midfielder, this week in talking about how when those outside backs push forward, when you have typically Greg Garza and Tyrone Mears, but this past week it was Mark Bloom in there for Garza, who was injured. We'll talk about that with Longshore later on. But he talked about when those outside backs are pushing forward, how important it is for either Lorenowitz or Carmona to stay back and how wide out they can get too, and kind of helping be that last line of defense for the five stripes.
Well, tactically, if the outside backs are higher up the field, then that leaves the space for the wingers on the opposite team. So when the ball turns over, we're covered in the middle by our center backs, and then usually one of the center midfielders will slide out.
Okay.
And that's how the shape kind of changes. So whether it's myself or Carlos, it can be one of us, and if we're not sending an outside back forward, and it's obviously primarily their job.
So just reading and filling.
Yeah. I mean, the center backs are obviously the last line of cover.
Right.
You don't really want them stepping out to try and stop plays at midfield or on a counterattack. So it is usually a midfielder's job.
So later on in the show, we'll have some more cuts from this week in training from Tata Martino, also more from Jeff Lorenowitz coming up. But I want to welcome in our guest now, the president of Atlanta United, Darren Eales, took some time to chat with us here on Off the Woodwork. And we're joined now by Darren Eales. He is the team president of Atlanta United and also the former director of football administration for Tottenham. And Darren, welcome to the program. I first wanted to mention both of those titles because I want to talk a bit about both. I want to talk about not only where the Five Stripes are currently, but also talk about your past a bit and maybe say farewell to the historic White Hart Lane. So welcome to Off the Woodwork, Darren.
Thanks, Kyle. Good to be on the show.
Well, let's talk about Atlanta United first. Where does this team stand through 10 games, about a third of the season gone by, a long, long time on the road, 7 out of 10 away from home? Compared to your expectations coming into this season, where is the team at right now?
Yeah, look, we're obviously pleased. As you pointed out, we've had 7 out of 10 games on the road, and they've been tough road trips as well. It's not been East Coast. It's been Portland, Seattle, twice to Canada. We've had Salt Lake as well. So it's been a pretty hectic schedule, and we've traveled a lot of miles, and we're a new team, so we knew it was going to be tough to start with, but I think to have 12 points from those 10 games for us is a good sort of haul. And look, we know we're going to get better as the season goes on, as Tatar gets more time to work with the players. But look, the other thing is Joseph hit the ground running with his 5 goals in 3 games, and we haven't had him for the last 7 matches, so I think that's something when Joseph comes back, which we're hoping sooner rather than later, we're going to have it's almost like a new signing, as the cliche goes.
Yeah, about that Joseph Martinez injury, originally when the international break wrapped up, the first report was 4 to 6 weeks. Now we're going on 8 weeks. What's the realistic window now, kind of an updated timetable for when the striker can return?
Yeah, look, we're going to go day to day. I mean, I think the important thing for us is, he's a young player, a key player for us, and we don't want to rush him back. It's the type of injury, any muscle injury where, the moment of truth is when you're playing in that game, and the last thing we want to do is try and bring him back too soon. And, we're not in a scenario where it's sort of end of season playoffs and you're looking to, perhaps take a chance. We want to be sure and give him the best opportunity to be 100% fit. So, that's our first and foremost approach, to be cautious with this, because, it's not just about this season. It's about, the whole future. And, for a young player, we want to be sure that he's getting the best opportunity to come back. But, I think, the good thing for us is Tito, you've seen him. He stepped in and played the number 9 role well. Kenwin's got a couple of goals, so it's given a chance for some of our other players to step up. And, we're going to need that depth as we go throughout the season, because, it's a long season in MLS and it's a challenging season.
He is Atlanta United team president Darren Eales here on Off the Woodwork, and talking about that depth now with the early transfer window closed last week. Were there any kind of developments that never really panned out over that, and anything you're looking forward to as the transfer window opens back up later this summer?
No, obviously we've got Brad Guzan coming in the summer, which we're excited about getting him to join the team. There was a little bit of a window where we thought we might be able to get him a little bit earlier, but obviously he's Middlesbrough's player and it's their prerogative. They wanted to keep him for the rest of the season, even though they were already automatically relegated. But, so we'll have him in the summer. So, we're pretty excited about getting him, American national team player with his experience to join the squad and, to add to that depth that you spoke about. I think the other thing, Carl, just to go back to your point about expectations, I think the thing that we're most pleased about is we're the highest, number of goals per game in the league. So as an expansion team, brand new team in the league, we tried to put together a squad that was going to play attractive soccer and score goals. So to say after, 10 games in, we're literally over a quarter of the way through the season, the fact that we've got, the highest number of goals per game, I think is something that I'm really excited about, because it's easy sometimes to be on a blank sheet of paper and say we're going to try and play this style, but to actually have executed it, and credit to the Tata and the players, I think people have been to our games. One thing you can't complain of is, lack of excitement. Now, that's something that we hope continues and becomes part of the philosophy of Atlanta United, all the way through, that we're a team that tries to attack, that tries to play exciting soccer. And, one thing you're guaranteed of is you'll see goals when you watch an Atlanta United game.
Well, in terms of scoring a lot of goals, obviously Houston Dynamo is a team that also does that. As we look ahead to Saturday's match, what do you see from this game? Give me your prediction for what will happen at Bobby Dodd Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's, Houston are, clearly a very good team. They've had an interesting season, a little bit the opposite of us, a lot of front-loaded home games rather than road games. And, they've struggled on the road. They struggled midweek. So, look, I think they're a dangerous team because of the way they play with their front four that they have. They're very quick. They're very dynamic. But, you know, clearly at the moment they've had some issues playing on the road. So for us, it's about making the most of our amazing fans and, you know, being home and trying to turn Bobby Dodd into a fortress. So, you know, the guys know this. Tat has been working with them. You know, this is a real chance for us to hopefully put in a performance, get that win at home in front of our great fans and start to establish, you know, Bobby Dodd and Atlanta as a fortress.
He is Darren Eales, the Atlanta United team president here on Off the Woodwork. In talking about the scheduling, I want to go back to that. 7 out of the first 10 on the road. Now the schedule is going to get a little bit interesting as the summer goes on, not only because of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, with those games getting pushed back to late in the season. That makes for a very, very tough stretch of about 17 or 18 days with 5 matches crammed in there. And then also you're talking about the U.S. Open Cup coming in as well. Just got the draw for June. You'll either play Charleston or Jacksonville in that game at Kennesaw State. The schedule coming up in the summer is starting to get a little crammed. How do you kind of keep the team prepared for a lot of games that are stuffed into the end of the season?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is, you know, this is part of the issue as an expansion team. You know, we, first of all, we've got to get used to playing in MLS. A lot of our players haven't played in the league. But also, you know, because of the issues we've had with the stadium, you know, we have the hand we're dealt. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's going to be different, obviously, in future years with a much more balanced schedule. But, you know, we are where we are. And we have to take some of what could be perceived as a negative and turn it into a positive. You know, we do know that come the last 10 games of the season, we'll have 8 of them at home. So if we can be there or thereabouts, that's a good schedule for us to try and, you know, make the most of our home advantage to help carry us to the playoffs. But we've also got, you know, that issue of, as you pointed out, Carl, fitting in so many games in a short space of time. But we do have August where we're going to have, unlike the other teams, we have almost like a mini break of 2 weeks where we won't have a game. So we'll be treating it almost like 2 seasons. And we'll be trying to use that a little bit like you have a winter break in Bundesliga or, you know, some of the European leagues. I think, you know, we'll look at how we periodize the players over the season and try to make advantage of that downtime to hopefully keep our players as fresh as we can for that final stretch.
What difficulties have you run into with, obviously, the stadium between Bobby Dodd and Mercedes-Benz, and now having also to negotiate with Kennesaw State for that U.S. Open Cup game?
Look, it's this is the challenges. I mean, we're so excited as a team. You know, this is our first season. We can't believe the level of support we've had from the city. I think, you know, there's a real buzz about Atlanta United, but just, you know, everything we've done has been incredibly well supported. But, you know, we've had our challenges, and, you know, you pointed out a big one there. You know, Kennesaw State, again, it's another venue that's not our venue. So, you know, we're sort of limited in terms of the control we have. But I think, you know, for us, for US Open Cup, they're going to be fantastic partners. It's a lovely little stadium. I think it's a great size for us for those early round games. So we're really fortunate in Bobby Dodd and in Kennesaw State. You know, we've had two good venues that have served us well whilst we're, you know, finalizing Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Well, the news came out on Friday afternoon. I know you have to be disappointed to lose Ann Rodriguez, the VP of Business Operations. We tend to think and talk about what's going on down on the pitch, but she's been really, really big behind the scenes, hasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. So I knew Ann from my time at Tottenham Hotspur when she worked at Under Armour, and, you know, she was someone that I went after as soon as I got the job here at Atlanta United. And look, she's done a fantastic job for us. I mean, she's a real, really great strategist. So, you know, to have someone like her as part of the business as we built the team, as we, you know, thought about building off the pitch, you know, because it's just as important off the pitch as on the pitch. You know, it's that off the pitch crowds and excitement around the merchandise and the kit, et cetera, that she was heavily involved in that's created the opportunity we have in Atlanta. So, look, you know, she's been fantastic for the club, and obviously is always going to be someone that's going to be dear to our hearts and part of that Atlanta United family. And we obviously wish her the best as she moves on to, you know, back to the Northeast to where her home roots are and in whatever she ends up doing.
And Darren, you mentioned the time in Tottenham and how your relationship with Ann goes back to that. I do want to switch gears and talk about your time with Spurs. Spent about half a decade there with Tottenham, and this year, of course, last week, saying farewell to White Hart Lane. 118 years of service. What does that stadium mean to you from your time there?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, when you think about 118 years at the same venue. And look, it was really emotional watching the game on the telly. I mean, I couldn't get there because we had the game on that weekend. You know, I'd love to have been there because, you know, that is a stadium that's seen some amazing games over the year. I mean, I was reminiscing even in my time there, the game when we played, Tottenham Hotspur played against Inter Milan. It was when Inter Milan were the holders of the Champions League, and it was when Gareth Bale had an incredible game, tearing poor old Mike on, who was playing right back that day, you know, screwing him into the ground as he was sort of running past him. And it was, you know, a moment I'll always remember, because I would always sit with, you have a UEFA official at Champions League games, who he's a delegate that monitors that you do everything properly. I mean, they're real bureaucrats. Yeah, you have to be fair, and you've got to make sure, you know, the advertising hoardings are exactly in the right spot, and, you know, everything's done to precision, and you've got to get the teams out at halftime right on the second, or you get fined. And we sit there. So I tend to just sit with him, because sometimes if you're with the person, it makes it harder for them to report you if you can sort of build up a rapport. And it was the second half, and the whole of the White Hart Lane crowd were shouting, "Taxi for Michael," which in English is a sort of basically a phrase of, "You're having a nightmare, just get a taxi and go home because you're just playing terribly." And the whole crowd was singing "Taxi for Michael." And he was a Norwegian guy, very dry, very straight-laced. And he sort of turned to me and said, you know, this sort of best English accent there, what is it they're saying? This "Taxi for Michael?" And I explained, yeah, "Taxi for Michael," what he meant. And he just smiled and said, "Yes, I agree." It was really quite funny. But, you know, that was an amazing night. White Hart Lane under the floodlights with a packed crowd was, you know, an amazing place to be. And you think of some of the legends from Jimmy Greaves, Glenn Hoddle, Paul Gascoigne, you know, all the players from the past, Danny Blanchflower, the great sort of double winning team in 61, the first ever English side to win the FA Cup and first division double. You know, there's been some amazing games at that site over the years. I don't know if you saw it, Carl, but it absolutely tipped it down for the ceremony. But then suddenly the sun came out and there was a beautiful rainbow that sort of framed the ground just as they were closing it down. I think, you know, that was a nice way of almost, I think, you know, Bill Nicholson, the great manager, sort of smiling down from heaven.
That's amazing. Well, and of course, in the new stadium now, young legends, maybe a Harry Kane can build some new Spurs stories. Did you see what he did against Leicester this past weekend?
Yeah, look, he's great. And I mean, he'd have been desperate to win the Golden Boot. So, you know, I think that's probably done it now for him. It's going to take a lot from Lukaku to catch him now. And look, Harry's a great player. Obviously, he was there as a youngster. He was only sort of 14 when I joined the club. And, you know, the whole way through, he had his, you know, he's a great example. And we talk in the academy here on, when you're trying to spot a player who's going to make it. You know, it's easy to spot the talent, but what's really difficult is to spot that grit and resilience and determination that any top player needs. And Harry Kane had that. I mean, you know, we look back now, he went on loan to Norwich City and didn't really do that well. You know, he went to Millwall and it started off pretty poorly. But, you know, each of those opportunities, Harry took it as a learning curve, and, you know, he took the positives out of that experience, and it's made him the player that he is today. And I think that in this day and age, that sometimes gets forgotten because, you know, we're in this sort of society now where people want to find a ready-made superstar from day one. And, you know, players get told from a young age that they're this great player. And as soon as they have adversity, if they've not got the right mentality, it can affect them because, you know, they're expected to be this great player. And, you know, you're not going to be, as a youngster, the number one player every week. It takes work and determination. So I think, you know, he's a good example of, yes, you need talent, but you also need that personality and will to want to succeed.
No doubt about it. Great stuff, Darren Eales. If you can give me a score line for Atlanta United and Houston Dynamo Saturday, what do you got?
I thought I'd do that because I jinxed it. I think there'll be a lot of goals given the two teams playing, and I'm hopeful for a win in front of our amazing fans. So I'll not put a score line, but I'm optimistic.
There you go. Darren Eales, team president of Atlanta United, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, Carl. Cheers.
Thanks so much to Darren for joining us. Great chat with him. And boy, to hear him talk about White Hart Lane and just how magical that place was for him over his 5 years before coming to Atlanta United in 2014, it's really too bad. You know, I think of Fenway Park and Wrigley Field being not only a soccer guy but a baseball guy too. But just to put it in terms of American sports and American venues, White Hart Lane has about a decade on Wrigley Field. That's how old it is and historic it is. In fact, it's 2 years older than the American League even was. American League started playing baseball in 1901. So White Hart Lane came in 1899. That's when Tottenham Hotspurs went to White Hart Lane. It's an absolutely incredible venue, and Darren Eales was there for 5 years as their director of football administration. Thanks a lot to him for joining us. And like he said, going to be a high-scoring game this week against Houston Dynamo. You have to imagine. Of course, we said that a week ago with Portland, and it ended up being 1-1, so you just never know. These games aren't played on paper. Now, one thing that Eales touched on, though, in that chat moments ago, is the difficulty of scheduling for this team, because they're an expansion side. They're going to have difficulties already as it is. The team's only been together for just a couple of months now. And you've got a bunch of guys who haven't played together, and on top of that, haven't played in Major League Soccer before. And what the United States offers in terms of soccer and scheduling and zigzagging across the country, it's different from any other league across the world, because, and the Five Stripes are a perfect illustration of this, they've gone from Seattle to Toronto to Montreal to Salt Lake to Portland. They've been drawing Z's across the United States for 7 weeks now, and they've only had one home match against DC United, of course, a disappointing 3-1 loss. It's been a really, really tough go for a team that already has plenty of difficulties being an expansion team and fighting an uphill battle. Then on top of that, the Joseph Martinez injury lumped in with all of it. Tata Martino talked this week, though, about the difficulty of scheduling early on.
It's difficult because you have to adapt to the field. You have to adapt to the climate, the long trip that goes into, you know, the week of the game. And also it's tough to overcome playing teams at home. We've performed well on the road, but I don't think that we have the amount of points that our performances necessarily deserved on the road. We also have to make sure that we're playing well at home, and we have to take advantage of our home games because we haven't done that yet.
And now they're going to start to see, I think, some fruits of their labor. They get two more games at home now, two tough ones against Houston this weekend and the next weekend, welcoming in David Villa and New York City FC, a team that they lost to 3-1 at Yankee Stadium just a couple of weeks back. So it's been a really tough schedule. But Darren Eales, he touched on it too earlier in the program about how late in the year, what that means is that the Five Stripes are going to get a whole lot of home games crammed in. They have something like 8 of their last 10 that will be at home, whether those are at Mercedes-Benz Stadium or Bobby Dodd. So they're going to have about a 2-2.5 month stretch there where it's on a weekly basis, sometimes twice weekly basis, they're going to get to play in front of a home crowd. So it all evens out in the end. But anyway, let's switch gears. Let's take a look on this episode of Off the Woodwork at what's coming up on Saturday at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Again, this is 92.9 The Game's official soccer podcast, Off the Woodwork. I'm your host, Kyle Tate. You can follow me on Twitter at HearKyleTate. You can follow the show on Twitter at OffTheW929. Craig Carlos Valentino out this week. We hope that he and I can get our schedules in order. That's really the only reason he's not on the show. But hopefully we can get back together next week and get a new episode out to you guys. But looking at this Houston team, I think the biggest key to this game is talking about rest. For Atlanta United, they've had a full week to prepare for this match. They haven't played since Saturday in Portland. And, of course, all the travel, you have to imagine that's given them quite a beating over the last 10 weeks, really, playing 7 of their first 10 on the road, but 6 of the last 7 away from home, too. And like I said, zigzagging across the country. But for Houston, this is a team that on Wednesday night lost 2-0 on the road at Philly Union and now have to come further south to Atlanta and a very tough crowd, a game that's already sold out, 4 straight sellouts to open up Atlanta United's inaugural season. It's going to be tough sledding for this Houston team because they've got 2 games this week and Atlanta United only has 1. And on top of that, Houston has not played good football on the road. Jeff Lorenowitz this week in training talked about his scouting report for Houston Dynamo and just what they're trying to do in breaking down Atlanta.
You know, they're a team that has scored a lot of goals with set pieces, and, you know, they're definitely a counter-attacking team. It seemed like Philly just kind of let them try and have the ball and make the game, and it didn't really work sometimes. So it shows they're beatable. You know, they've been playing really well, but, you know, when you go on the road, it's a bit tougher, and we'll get them after, you know, 3 days rest. So it'll be a good one.
And then Tata Martino chimed in as well. He talked about how Houston is really a counter-attacking team, even though later on in the show we'll talk with Jason Longshore about that, whether he actually gives them that title as a counter-attacking team or if that's just something that is sort of in the fold of a broader plan for Houston. But for Tata, he says this team is going to play deep and they're going to try to counter quickly.
The game will probably be like that. They'll probably give us possession and they'll drop back a lot. So we'll play off like that. But we're also, in the hands of their style, and that we'll be able to find space to counterattack.
So with that, let's dive a little bit deeper into this week. Houston Dynamo, Atlanta United coming up on Saturday at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Jason Longshore joins us now. Joined now on Off the Woodwork by Jason Longshore. He's 92.9 The Game's soccer analyst and also on the broadcast alongside Adam Schick for Atlanta United all season long. And Jason, thanks for joining the program. Match 11 coming up against a very, very tough team in Houston Dynamo, but they've been tough at home and not so much on the road. What's been with the tale of two teams for Houston this year?
It almost seems like a mental block at this point because they are so good at home. They've been one of my favorite teams to watch around the league. A lot of speed, very direct, very quick attacks, in some ways similar to Atlanta United. I like the young Hondurans they brought in Elise and Kyoto, but they can't repeat it away at all. And the other stat that jumps out to me about Houston that is very strange when you study these after a while, the games that they've had a possession advantage, they've lost. The games that they've won, they have not had the bulk of possession. Very odd that that happens on a regular basis.
And I guess that's because this is a team that likes to counterattack. They like to sit deep and kind of absorb the attack. And so, of course, they're not going to have possession. They'd like to give away possession and try to get on the run the other way. So it seems to make sense, but you're absolutely right. A team that possesses the ball seems like they would win more often. Stats in soccer seem to lie on that sometimes, though.
Yeah, Philadelphia seemed to throw them off on Wednesday. Philadelphia just backed off and let Houston have a lot of possession. And when Houston's able to go north-south, they're very dangerous. And a lot of it comes down to the speed that they have up top and committing numbers up top. When they're forced to go east-west and go sideways, they really don't seem to know how to do it well. And their passing is just not that great. They're very good with a long, direct ball. And a counter-attacking team, I don't even know if I'd give them that. They're very athletic. They're very good playing direct. It's not a true bunker and counter type of approach. It's more of just when they win the ball, they're looking to fire it down the field as far as they can and get the speed going rather than a true counter-attacking team, if that makes any sense.
He is Jason Longshore of Atlanta United's broadcast, the color commentator here on Off the Woodwork. It does make sense. You mentioned something that kind of strikes home with Atlanta United, too, about how they don't seem to be a particularly good passing team when kind of building from the back. And you and I have talked about the struggles for Atlanta United in that regard, too, that when they're not on the run on the counterattack, when they're forced to kind of build from the back, it seems like United has had very similar struggles. But it looked like something that they did better against Portland. Do you agree with that? I mean, did they build from the back better than you had seen against the Timbers?
Yeah, completely agree. I think Portland showed that Tata Martino is trying to develop new layers to this team. Whereas in the past, they only looked at their most dangerous in the counter. Against Portland, they looked very comfortable in possession. They looked patient. They weren't rushing the play at all. At times, they were even too patient in the final third. And they really controlled that game and managed it very well. I think you're going to see more of that against the right types of opponents. I'm not sure if Houston will be. I wonder how Martino is going to approach this. Is he going to go the Philadelphia route where he sits back a little bit and makes Houston try to play? Or does he think he can beat them straight up and control the play and still limit their opportunities going the other direction?
Too patient. I know some of the criticism for Atlanta United is that they're not firing off shots when they have opportunities. I know Miguel Almiron had a couple of chances that he didn't take, instead decided to leave it off. What's with this team? It almost seems like it'd be an easy switch to shoot more instead of pass more, but they can't seem to get over that hump.
It almost seems like Almiron was trying too hard to find his teammates last week. And, he basically said as much. He had some opportunities that he passed up. He was looking for the perfect pass as opposed to, a slightly less than perfect shot. They need to take their chances more, though, when they get into the final third. We saw it with Gressel on his goal. He didn't hesitate. One touch shot. Very quick. Very decisive. need more of that because they're getting better penetration into the final third. They're creating some opportunities. They just need to take those chances when they have them. And it's going to be on Almiron. It's going to be on Assad taking more shots. It's going to be on Gressel when he has the opportunities as well. They have to take more chances, sometimes just to open up the defense a bit and not let them sit back deeper and deeper.
How much of the indecision do you think goes back to the Joseph Martinez injury? Because that, for me, that's kind of when it started. Martinez was the finisher. He would, I mean, get it and fire away and score the 5 goals in 2 matches. And then he gets hurt, and it seems like the rest of the team all of a sudden is almost playing with their tail between their legs.
Martinez makes more decisive runs. I think that's the biggest difference, is Martinez splitting the two center backs with his runs off the ball. He was just clinical at it. And Vishalba, you know, is a converted forward from playing on the wing, so his runs are a little different. He's looking to make longer runs around into space. Kenwyn Jones doesn't have that explosiveness that Martinez has. So some of that is just down to Martinez creating better opportunities with his runs off the ball. I think a lot of it, though, really comes down to, you know, we forget that this team is still figuring each other out. They're still getting to know one another and what that means and what each player is going to do off the ball. And when you have good rhythm in the first few games with Joseph Martinez and then he gets injured and you have to create new rhythm on the fly, it's tough. It's tough when you don't have anything to fall back on. And that's where Atlanta United has been this season.
Well, we talked earlier on the show with Darren Eales, and of course he and Tata Martino and really everybody with this Atlanta United team, they're not being decisive, I guess, with when Joseph Martinez will come back. Do you have any kind of insight on the quad injury? I mean, the original read was 4 to 6 weeks. Now we're going on 8 weeks since he got hurt in the World Cup qualifier for Venezuela.
Really, I don't. It just comes down to not wanting to rush him. And it's a luxury that they have at this point with some of the other talent. You know, it's hurt him in the short run. I think it will help in the long run because all hope is that when Martinez is back, this won't become a nagging issue. He'll be fully healed when he's back in the lineup. Quad injuries can be very tricky. I think they're a little bit harder to read than hamstrings and others. You just kind of have to wait and see when he feels comfortable and when he feels like he can do everything he needs to do up top. And he's not there yet. So don't rush him. You still have Vishalba. I think they looked a lot better last week with Vishalba up top as opposed to Jones. I think he fits this team's, you know, model a little bit better. And Gressel showed that he can play wide. That gives you another option that was a bit of a concern when Vishalba moved up top. So I think they have the luxury of figuring it out and not rushing Martinez back.
Yeah, how big of a surprise was that for you to see Julian Gressel on the right wing when the lineups were announced?
When the lineups were announced, it actually was a pretty big surprise. I was wondering how it was going to look. But once you saw the way they played, which was slightly different with Larinowicz dropping deeper a lot. So that freed up Mears and Bloom to really push forward. And that's the highest I've seen the outside backs play for Atlanta United consistently in a match. So it really turned into a three-man back line a lot of times with Larinowicz in the back with Gonzalez, Pires, and Parkhurst, and those outside backs becoming midfielders. So what that did with Gressel and Assad is they were able to pinch inside and really play as auxiliary central midfielders alongside of Almiron. So it wasn't that different of a role once the game got going. On paper, it looked a little weird for Gressel wide, but when you saw the way he played, he was tucked in a lot playing with Almiron.
Well, one other injury that was of concern last week, Greg Garza was out, did not make the trip to Portland. Do you expect to see him back this week?
I'm not sure. Martino was pretty coy about that this week after training. Garza has been in training, not always with the team. He's been working on his own a fair bit. So it's going to be a question of how he feels. He's another one you don't have to rush back because you have a guy like Mark Bloom. Mark Bloom would start for over half of the teams in MLS, in my opinion. And I thought he looked great on Sunday in Portland. I thought he really neutralized Dairon Asprilla to the point that Asprilla was subbed out pretty quickly, and they tried to bring on Darren Maddox to get a different look. He also handled Nacho Piatti really well in Montreal. Mark Bloom can start for most teams, and I don't think you really lose anything with him in the lineup. So if Garza's not 100%, you don't have to rush him.
Keys to beating Houston Dynamo at Bobby Dodd Saturday.
Going to be back to the decisiveness that we've talked about, really putting away your chances and putting away your chances early. Houston's a team They've lost their four road games this season, as we talked about. But in three of those, they gave up a goal in the first 17 minutes. So getting an early goal and making them lose their confidence is the key. You don't want to let a team like this start to figure it out against you. I had a coach who always said, you know, little teams, you don't want them to grow in a match. And right now on the road, Houston plays like a little team. You don't want them to grow into. You don't want them to gain confidence as the game goes on. So early goals, put them away quickly, and then coast to a win. That's how you have to take care of this on Saturday night.
If you had to predict a final scoreline, and I know you and I have both been pretty awful at this all season long, but final scoreline for you for Saturday's game.
So I went with the percentages a little bit. Houston on the road this year has lost every game by two goals. They lost their last three 2-0. They lost the first one 4-2 against Portland. I picked 4-2, actually. I think Atlanta's really going to get off the marks with goals. I think the crowd is going to give them a huge spark on a Saturday night at Bobby Dodd. And Houston just has some serious confidence issues on the road, and they're also likely going to be missing Albert Elis, which hurts them. They're not as dangerous when they don't have the Elis and Kyoto combination on the wings. So I think Atlanta can take advantage of that, handle the attack a little bit better, and score some goals Saturday night, send the fans home happy.
Now, I just want to point out that last week we also thought it was going to be a high-scoring affair in Portland, and it finished 1-1.
I know I probably just jinxed it, but, you know, that's what it looks like on paper to me anyway.
So Jason Longshore just said it in stone. Going to be a 0-0 draw Saturday at Bobby Dodd Stadium.
There we go. That's probably a better way to handle this.
All right. He's Jason Longshore, color commentator for Atlanta United. Always appreciate the time, brother.
Anytime.
And as always, thanks to Jason for his time. Always a pleasure to hear his tactical breakdown. And again, you can catch him on the call on 92.9 The Game. A 7 o'clock kick Saturday night. Atlanta United, Houston Dynamo from Bobby Dodd Stadium. You can also catch myself and Jason in pre and post on Facebook Live. So follow 92.9 The Game. You can like them on Facebook, and you'll see our pregame and postgame show pop up. We'll start the pregame at about 6:15 on Saturday night. And it'll be about a half hour. We'll be taking viewer questions, et cetera, on both of these teams, and we'll break it down. So that's going to do it on another edition of Off the Woodwork from 92.9 The Game. Again, I'm your host, Kyle Tate. You can follow the show at OffTheW929 and myself at HearKyleTate on Twitter. Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll be back once again a week from now as we break things down from this past week against Houston and look ahead to a rematch with New York City FC. And hopefully Craig Carlos Valentino can join us once again. Chime in throughout the week. We'd love to hear your thoughts on how Atlanta United does on Saturday at Bobby Dodd. And hopefully we can see you there as well and shake hands. Come say hello if you happen to see us out and about at Bobby Dodd Stadium. That's a wrap. Talk to you again in a week. So long.